everybody, this is Justin Case, and here's another episode of Case in Point, episode 66. And I'm a little rusty. I haven't done this in a while, but today I have a very special guest to mark my return to the great land of podcasting, Ryan McCormick. How you doing, buddy?
Oh, I'm good, man. It's good to be back. I'm happy to be here.
It's funny. We always end up doing shows around Halloween.
We do. I was recording this week's episode of my show, and I was talking about how I was going to be on here, and I was like, you know what? Like, this is our time of year. Like, we always try to do an episode at least one time. It always falls right around this time, so it works out great.
Yeah. It's our annual podcasting session. Yeah. So we were going to be doing some wrestling was going to be our big topic. And, you know, Ryan and I had talked about it ahead of time that we really wanted to spend another episode where we did a lot of wrestling talk, all old and new, and yeah, free flow it and see what comes up, because the way things have kind of turned out with a lot of people being home, there hasn't been a lot of big events lately. And with the last year and a half, they're kind of squeaking their way back into it. And I'll share my opinions on that later on. It's great to see there's a lot of shoot interviews going on. There's a lot of, well, maybe not so many cameos, but for a while there was several cameos.
Yeah.
Elite Scooby-Doo. You know. So you had to do it, Ryan.
I understand.
I don't think I'd be calling The Undertaker if I was on my deathbed. That'd just be kind of wrong.
Yeah, but yeah.
Anyway, I want to talk about some of the AEW versus WWE in the ratings. Raw, SmackDown, AEW type, you know, numbers going back and forth. And maybe some of the ratings, what maybe are considered good versus bad. Because I'm not really too up on that, you know. You know, they say like Hannibal TV is another one. I really like the Hannibal TV. Kind of a shout out to them. I like a lot of his news.
Yeah.
So I know a lot of people don't like him, but I'm not personal. I like what they offer as a product as far as latest news. And they're one of the best ones where, like, he'll just jump on and then tell you right straight up what's going on and jump off. That's exactly what I like. And just quick, you know, as opposed to like the Dave Meltzer in-depth discussion, which is great too, but I just don't have a lot of time to sit and watch or read or listen to a lot of banter, unless it's something where it's in the background. So that's great. Also, there's been some topics I want to talk maybe a little bit about some of the talent, like the, I guess, I don't know if you call it really mass exodus from WWE over in a lot of places like AEW and things of that nature. Like, lot of people that have gone, you know, where people expected them to go and they didn't go. So maybe we'll get into that. But what are some of your thoughts, Ryan, on some of the, a lot of the shoot interviews where, like, it's you pay these wrestlers to interview them. But what are your thoughts on that? Do you think it's something that is good for the wrestlers and maybe it's something that is justified? I know maybe some people, I can't believe he's got to pay them. Well, they got to make a living, and if they're older and they can't wrestle, it's an appearance, right?
Yeah, and that's how I look at it. Is I think it's good for the guys to get money without having to take bumps and harm their body and risk concussions or other injuries. And for me, it's interesting to always hear from a wrestler's perspective. It's interesting to hear backstage stories of, like, what this guy is like behind the scenes, or, you know, oh, you love this match, well, here's a fun fact about it, or whatever. And I think when you go into these things, you got to take it with a grain of salt, because they're wrestlers, they're always working, you know, so you got to always kind of keep in mind that these guys kind of grew up in a profession that originated in the carnivals, you know. That's why you always hear the term carny and stuff. So it's like, some of these stories are outrageous and ridiculous, but they're fun and entertaining, you know? And it's like, maybe there's only a 5% grain of truth in it, but I don't care. I'm entertained. These are guys I watched as kids growing up, and I bought the ticket. I'm taking the ride, you know, tell me some stories, and then I'll kind of, you know, sort through what I believe or whatnot.
Well, and I think a lot of those interviews are, there's not a whole lot to hide behind. Especially if you get an interviewer that's really, he's asking a question, you really can't step around very easily.
Right.
And you know, people know if you're trying to, avoid talking about the elephant in the room, whatever that may be. But
right.
I saw one where I believe it was Hannibal TV where he's interviewing the goon. That interview lasted a grand total of 15 minutes because the guy was drunk off his. He was three sheets of the wind, and he
really,
you know, he finally got upset enough to where he said, "All right, you know, you're a drunk and you're a loser," and all. He goes, "Thank you very much." Like that, he didn't care.
Wow.
I think it was Devin from Hannibal. He was like, you know, he goes, "Thanks a lot. You're something like that." And he's like, "That was it. The interview was done." I was like, "Wow," because, you know, Devin seems to be kind of guy that he's very gracious. He's very, very gracious, and he's good at kind of steering the interview forward, even when the people he's dealing with. That's got to be hard, though. You're paying, you paid. I believe he pays to have these people on, and some of them are not in their best shape as far as like. You know, maybe they take meds or, and, you know, these guys get older and stuff, but some of them are clearly just been hitting the sauce, and that's got to really be suck when you're paying these guys. But there's been some great interviews. I really like watching the shoot interviews a lot, and it's great because some of them are like 3 hours. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you got a long drive ahead or you're by yourself and you just need a human voice to listen to or voices in an interview, it's fantastic. So
I really
like this myself. It's worth the money. You know, if I was paying somebody.
Yeah, for sure.
So, and how'd you feel about like when the cameos started getting were big there for a while? I think it was last year, towards the middle of last year, that was their peak from what I saw.
Yeah, I think it's super cool. As a fan, if I like got a present that was like, I don't know, my favorite wrestler is Bret Hart. So if I got like, someone got me a cameo of Bret Hart, you know, wishing me a happy birthday or whatever, I would love it. But like, there were ones with like the Undertaker one, and I think John Cena was doing something. There were some of like the WWE guys that were charging insane amounts of money for these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, whatever, it's the WWE. They're like the, you know, the multi-billion-dollar corporation. You know what I mean? They're going to get their money one way or another. And it's got to be a thrill if you're one of those kids who's a big John Cena guy, and you know, and you wake up Christmas morning and there's John Cena wishing you a happy Christmas or whatever. I think it's cool. I think it's the nature of the world we live in now, where when you and I were kids, you know, and Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair were the world's champions of their respective territories, it would have been kind of out of the realm of possibility to think of getting a recorded message from, you know, Hulk Hogan telling you, you know, thanks for being a Hulkamaniac, brother, you know, like, so I think it's super cool now. I think it's the evolution of technology, of the business. And I think a lot of it kind of came to fruition with the pandemic and a lot of people being stuck at home and a lot of these wrestlers not being able to do anything, not being able to make money. And so this was kind of an interesting way for them to kind of keep their name out there, keep their character alive, and still be able to somewhat make a living while they can't actually be performing due to, you know, this thing called COVID. I don't know if anyone's heard of it, but it's a big thing now.
An island off in the Pacific or something.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah.
Well, you know, that was a thing. I'm so glad that they're not doing those. I'm gonna tell you, I'm gonna just rant here, a mini rant.
Yeah.
I could not stand those stupid monitors that they had at WWE when you had the wrestlers and there's no noise from the crowd or any of that stuff. And you have those stupid monitors, all those people watching.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous. I don't care what the situation is. That's ridiculous. And I don't like any show that does it. Like, I think if you watch, like, America's Funniest Videos, which is a show I really would always watch with my kids and everything, and they always got a kick out of it. And it was – but it was like, you see all these people, like
– yeah, yeah.
Smiling, so, and it was like, there's something wrong with this, man. This is like something off of like an early 90s Marvel comic where like they're on Mojo's planet and they're all watching someone get torn apart in the Coliseum or something, but they're on a monitor. I don't know, but it's like, or like something from like The Running Man.
yeah, that's what it feels like.
You know, it's kind of scary, but it was aggravating me a lot, and I'm glad that they're not really doing, I don't think they're doing that anymore. I think
they're
good. I'm glad to see them get away from that, because I can be honest with you, I did not want a permanent situation like that, because I've taken my son. I went to a SmackDown event with one of my buddies in town here. We actually have a minor league hockey arena downtown. And so we had two live SmackDown shows we went to. And I took my son to the one in February 19 before everything went kaput. Yeah. And he loved it. It was great. And it's funny because what they do in those events, I'm sure you've been to them. Yours are probably more televised because you're in the bigger area. I'm out here in this Dust Bowl. But the fact that they even came here to me was great, but it was a stopping point before they went to Portland. And so the thing was like they have this camera, the guy's moving it around, and it's more like it's just for to put you on the Jumbotron at the event, not televise anything, right?
Right.
The guy goes like this. He goes right on my son's face. He's like, straight face because he didn't expect it. He's like, I got on camera. I'm on TV. And I didn't have the heart to tell him that they weren't recording it. You know, so I'm like, yeah, that's great. Yeah, you know. And so it was great. He drank a tall thing of Coke, like a tall thing.
Yeah.
And he did pretty good, man. I thought we were going to have to go like 5 minutes later. He was like, we waited till I think second to the last match. And they did an intermission. Everybody went at the same time, but it was fine. And it was awesome because to take my son to a wrestling event is so cool because I never got to do that as a kid, you know. Yeah. And I really enjoyed it a lot. And my buddy Rodney's great. I need to get him on the show one of these days, but he got to see Portland, the Portland promotion with Don Owens.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And he got to see when Piper was there and all of that. He saw all that stuff.
Man. Yeah.
And he was telling me about how Don Owens would, for people not familiar, that was a promotion in Portland. And they were part of the NWA. It was when those were kind of all part of the National Wrestling Alliance. And that was one of the, Pacific Northwest Wrestling or something like that. What was the official name? And they would record on VHS tapes. And then it was low budget, so he'd record over the same tapes. And all these matches he used to talk about, he goes, it makes me sick to think about all those great matches that we'll never get to see because he just recorded over the same tapes. And so, but he got to see, there's a place in Washington, in Eastern Washington, called Findlay, Washington. And there's like a fire hall there. He got to see Andre the Giant back before he was a big name.
Wow.
And like Chief J. Strongbow was there. I mean, it was, he tells me all these stories about when he was a kid. Some of the matches that he would go and see as a kid back in like the 70s, and it was awesome. So it was great to have him. We'd sit there and talk about that stuff in between the matches and stuff at this live event. So it was great. So, and he was a really super cool dude because he got my son a signed Roman Reigns poster.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And so he was able to go out and like, he was on the outside. I was like, Rodney, that was really great of you to do that. I really appreciate that, you know, and everything. And he was great. He got me like signed posters of like, or the big glossy, you know, 8x10s or whatever of like Jimmy Hart and Ricky Steamboat. Cause every year he goes to this wrestling memorabilia show that's in, I believe it's in Chicago. And like Goldberg's there, of course, cause he's kind of a Chicago resident and things like that. But that's just so cool. So shout out to him. I don't know. He listens to this show, I think, but I'll tell him about this and have him listen to it. But yeah, I want to get him on the show, and maybe when I can get him on the show, I can have you on the show. You guys would be, it'd be awesome exchanging stories because he's got a huge knowledge base.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, so I just got to convince him to get, he's not a podcast guy, so I'll have to sweet talk him a little bit.
Yeah.
But no, it was great because it was like we got to see that right before everything cut loose. And so that was neat because we had no idea, you know. And
yeah.
So, but anyway, that being said, I did see that there was they actually had a live event for the NXT had the Halloween Havoc.
Wasn't that
October 26th? Did you happen to see any of that or?
I
saw the highlights. It looked good.
It was just this past what day of the week are they on now? They're on Tuesdays now, I think. I watched the whole thing. You watched the highlights, so you probably saw all the good stuff, which is good. I sat through the whole 2-hour show, and it was good. NXT is really different now than what people remember it being from a few years ago, because it's basically it's everyone that you've never heard of. They've kind of it's all new people. There's a couple like Tommaso Ciampa still there. And there's maybe one or two others, but it's basically all new guys because they kind of let go of their entire talent roster. And they all have gimmicks now. It's almost kind of like when we were kids and everyone, like there was a a wrestling dumpster or a dumpster driver, whatever Duke Drozy was. There's a wrestling tax accountant. You know what I mean? There's all that stuff. So now it's like everyone has. There's a guy who's really woke, and he talks about how woke he is. What are some of the other characters they have? I can't even think of some of them, but each one has kind of a specific character and a specific gimmick. And they have Rick Steiner's kid going by the name of Braun Breaker. And he looks like Rick Steiner. He wrestles like Rick Steiner. He talks like Scott Steiner. Like, it's ridiculous, but it's crazy because they don't ever acknowledge that he's Steiner's kid. Like he uses the Steiner recliner. He uses the belly to belly suplex, but they don't acknowledge that he's Steiner's kid, which drives me nuts. And because it's WWE, because they're on USA, they are doing a tie-in with the new Child's Play TV show. So they had Chucky, the doll, come out and like was making matches and stuff like that. And I don't know if you remember this or not, but Chucky feuded with Rick Steiner in the dying days of WCW when it was just really, really bad. And
I didn't watch it at that point. I quit. I'm like, this is terrible.
And you're a much smarter man than I was, because I was still watching it at that point. And so it gave me flashbacks of that horrible time in wrestling, where it was just like, what? I mean, I love Child's Play and I love wrestling, but I don't want to see the two come together. Yeah. So
mashups aren't good for wrestling. Mashups are trash.
Exactly. The matches were really good on the show, but the stuff in between, like they brought back the spin the wheel, make the deal, which was the old WCW gimmick.
Yes.
And Chucky was spinning the wheel and making the matches. So once they got past the kind of gimmicky stuff before the matches were really good. Tommaso Ciampa and Braun Breaker had a great title match. The tag team title match was great. They had a women's ladder match. So the wrestling is good, but there's just a lot of this kind of goofy, we have to tie it into the other shows on USA. That's just the nature of the beast, I suppose.
Oh, and that's why I've always favored WCW before the logo change, right? Because when the logo changed, that's really when you had a year left or something close to that. And I always in my mind, I'm always, okay, is this pre-logo change? Because even then it was, because you had Vince Russo was there and a lot of this stuff. And I guess I like the older stuff where it's more straight wrestling. They just get down to it and lock up. Yep. That's what I want. And I'm with you. Yep. And I can't stand WWE. And it's not because the matches are bad. Their matches are actually pretty decent, but it's all this dancing down to the ramp and doing all this. Ooh, you know, it's like, I don't need their woke politics. I don't need their agenda shoved in my face. I don't care about that stuff. I want to watch some decent wrestling. That's why you paid for the pay-per-view.
Yep.
Leave that other crap out. I don't care.
Let me ask you this. Have you seen, on YouTube, the match that happened recently between Minoru Suzuki and Bryan Danielson?
No, that's one of those mixed gender matches, isn't it?
No. It's Minoru Suzuki is a Japanese. He was an MMA fighter, and
a guy's name? Okay.
Yeah. And Bryan Danielson, of course, is a former Daniel Bryan. This match is on YouTube for free. Watch this match. Anyone listening to this, watch this match. These two guys wrestled this 20-minute match like it's a real fight. And they beat the crap out of one another. And they're putting submissions, and they're bending each other. And both guys have real background in actual Greco-Roman wrestling, MMA, and stuff like that. And there's one point in the match where they're just standing there, and they're just trading forearms back and forth. And the great thing about it is there's one point where Minoru Suzuki – forearms Bryan Danielson, and he just collapses like a real person would if you hit them in a fight. And they get a close-up on his face, and he's kind of glassy-eyed, and he's kind of looking around like he doesn't know where he is. And just the story that these two tell in the ring with their bodies, with their facial expressions, it feels like these two are having a real match. And it made me so happy. It made me feel like such a fan again, because it just felt so real. It took away all the, like you said, it took away all the cartoony gimmick stuff. There was none of the, like, you know, you know, go to the app and do this and watch our network, blah, blah, blah. It was just like, these two guys want to win because they are competing for a shot at a title. You know, the winner of this will move on in the rankings or whatever. It just felt like a real sports event, which is something that AEW, I think, does way better than anyone else currently. And but this match alone just really brought the fan back out of me. It just felt so real.
Yeah, because they're selling it, right? That's the whole point of
selling. Exactly. Yeah, the selling, the expressions, the you know, there's points in the match where I'm like, I don't know, like, I think this guy might really be getting his arm torn off, right? Like the way that submission is bending that guy's ankle, he might really be screaming out in pain. Like, I don't know. I like it when the line is blurred between what is a guy selling his character and what is like, oh, I'm like really competing in a match here. I love when that is blurred and I lose myself in what I'm watching.
Like Mick Foley's matches, which he was getting damaged.
Yeah, right.
At his own request.
Well, yeah, I mean, listen, my claim to fame as a wrestling fan is I got to be in the building when he fought Undertaker in the Hell in the Cell and got thrown off the cage. And I will tell you.
Oh, you were there for that.
I was there for that. We in the building did not know what was happening. We thought he was dead. Like, there were people crying in the stands. I was losing. And this is before cell phones. So I can't. It's not like I could go on the internet and check Twitter or anything like that. I can't even call anyone at home watching and be like, what are the announcers saying? I'm just watching it. And you're seeing the paramedics run out. And it was the most insane thing. It was so hard to. The rest of the. I think after that match was like the Shamrocks in the finals and Stone Cold and Kane. But it's like. That took how do you follow that? How do you follow that? I mean, it was insane, but that I will never forget that feeling of just watching and just reaching over and grabbing my friend by the shoulder and just screaming as loud as I could. Because I was like, oh my God, I'm watching a man who I've admired. I'm watching him die in front of me. Like,
were his wife and kids. They were there for that match.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was
absolutely heartbreaking.
It really is.
And they actually detailed that aspect of, you know, his career where, like, it broke my heart to see his – I was like, God, you shouldn't have your kids see this, man.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
They never should have been involved – been have to see that match because they know it's their dad in there.
Yep.
Horrible. But yep. I'm glad, number one, he's okay.
Yeah.
And – I mean, the poor guy, he's kind of torn up, but he literally was asking for it in a lot of cases because that's how he felt about his job, work in the ring.
Yep.
And as far as being tough, he's pretty much top of the heap. And at least from the wrestlers from the last couple decades, he's definitely, I mean, think about all the stuff he did before he joined WWE. He was doing those barbed wire matches and stuff. And I think he went up against Abdul the Butcher a couple times, right?
Many times, yeah. I mean, they had a big feud in WCW, which was great. Right. But their stuff in, like, Japan and, like you said, like
overseas?
The barbed wire stuff, the King of the Deathmatch tournaments, stuff like that is just – it's gruesome. It's gruesome, but it's kind of what put him on the map.
Right.
No one was doing that thing, in at least in America at that point. That was all – and I remember, like, having I would get this catalog in the mail – And you would, like, order these tapes from Japan, and I would be waiting, like, 6 weeks for my VHS tapes to come and pop them in and just watch these guys. And I was frustrated because I couldn't understand the commentary because it's obviously in Japanese. So I was like, I want to hear what they're saying. I want to hear – but you could just hear the announcers, like, just so exasperated and losing their breath as these guys were, like, beating the shit out of each other with barbed wire bats and exploding rings and just blood everywhere. Gruesome stuff.
Yeah. It's plunder. It's plunder, like New Jack and guys like that. Yeah. I mean, he would jump off the.
Yeah.
New Jack, we've watched ECW like November to Remember and some of the other pay-per-views. I was probably, I don't know, 17, 18 years old.
Yep.
And it seems like yesterday that guy was jumping off the balcony.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. Crazy stuff. Yeah. But I like to see the AEW is holding its own against WWE because they have all these people they're letting go and they've hired new writers, which from what I could tell, some of the writers are definitely questionable and really have no place in writing story for wrestling in the first place. And I think I really, we probably know why, that WWE wants to have a corporate face. They're not going to let the wrestlers do their own story. I'm sure a lot of them could probably do a decent job if you gave them the chance.
For sure.
I don't know if that's a Bruce Pritchard thing or if that's a Vince thing, or if people have said Vince is really out of touch.
Well, I think at the end of the day, from what everyone says, from what you read and everything, is everything, no matter what, goes through Vince. Vince is the guy that comes in on Mondays and tears up the script, and they're rewriting Raw as it's going on the air. You know, I mean, that's insane to me. The thing, to your point, though, I hate the idea, like you said, of bringing in these writers, and most of them are from Hollywood. Most of them have Hollywood credentials, have never watched wrestling, didn't grow up as fans, kind of don't understand what it is, but approach it like it's a TV show or a movie or something like that. Whereas AEW lets their wrestlers, there's no scripts. So it feels much more real when they go out there and they're talking about their match, because they know their character. They know who they are and what they're trying to portray and what they want their character, what their character would say if he were really involved in this situation. Not like, Johnny Hollywood over here thinks that this wrestler would say these words. So then you have to, and it's sometimes it's hard watching Raw because you can see these guys trying to remember the lines that they're supposed to memorize. It's like watching a bad Community play or something, you know, like you're like, well, don't forget your line. Like, whereas in AEW, it's just much more free flowing. It feels like what you would really say in that situation. And I think that's the biggest disconnect. One of the biggest disconnects between the two companies is that Vince McMahon and the writers are so trying to micromanage everything, whereas AEW is just like, you guys know what your character is. You go out there, you want to win the match, go out there and talk to each other and figure it out and go back and forth on the mic. And the promo exchanges on AEW are just some of my favorite parts of the show. You know, I don't know if you're up to date on everything, but the current thing they're doing now with Chris Jericho's team feuding with Dan Lambert's team. And Dan Lambert is this MMA guy who just comes out and calls all of us fans, like people who live in our mother's basement and we're a bunch of losers. And it, like, I love that. So he is getting, people are throwing in the ring, people are booing him. It feels like the old NWO. Like, this is true heat. They really hate this guy. He's a real heel. And that's what wrestling's about. It's a good versus bad, you know, a heel versus face.
Yeah, that's excellent. I mean, it's funny. I had to go get some shopping done this morning, get some groceries. And I was talking to my wife. Usually it's kind of like a one-sided enthusiasm because I'm Mr. Wrestling fan, right? we're kind of on our own sometimes. And, I was explaining to her why I bought a Kevin Nash NWO. I found one. I got it right here. Check it out. I got this Kevin Nash, and it's the one where he's doing bandana on his head.
Yeah, the wolf pack. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and so it's funny because I have the Scott Hall go, now I got the Scott Hall one. This is great, and I was justifying my purchase.
Yeah.
Is that one. So.
Is that new? I've never seen those ones before.
Yeah, these just came out. This was the Big John Studd and Macho Man line.
Oh, okay.
And what they did was they started over and re-released them with the figures now have that true effects.
Right.
And what they're able to do is scan the likeness of the actual person, the wrestler themselves. And so they're redoing these so that the faces look more like the actual wrestlers.
Okay.
These things have been like, if you go back 10 years ago, they don't look that great because it's just some guy in a studio sculpting something that looks like the actual person.
Yeah.
Now, these are like, I just got this one. This one is the Warlord.
Oh, I love the Warlord. That's awesome.
Yeah, this is the second one that they did. Now, this might have been the Powers of Pain Warlord when he's with Barbarian. I really want them to do Barbarian. It's when Mr. Fuji was his manager.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's cool. But anyway, what they're doing is they're re-releasing they're starting over from the original Elite, Mattel Elites, and they are redoing them with that accurate likeness. And it's great. I think it's awesome. They did it with here's Vader. Look, I got.
That's awesome. Oh, he's even got the thing that used to shoot out the smoke and stuff, the mask.
Yeah, the full shoulder pads and stuff. Yeah. He got it in Japan. When he'd wrestle over in Japan.
Yeah, that is awesome.
And so like when Harley Race was his manager and stuff, and he's like, it always reminds me of Battle Bowl, you know, because it's like Harley Race is like, listen, you got to get back in there. Otherwise, you can't take place in the Battle Bowl. Like,
I used to love Battle Bowl. That
was awesome. I love Battle Bowl. That was such a great one-off.
Yeah.
One-off pay-per-view. But yeah, it's awesome because, you know, I love that. But anyway, what I'm going with this is that we're putting groceries in the car and I'm like, you got to understand. A lot of people don't like Kevin Nash. I'm going through this whole thing. And I go, he did this retirement match against Ricky Morton in an independent match, just for an independent promotion.
I saw that.
I mean, Ricky Morton was like pretty much toast. And he's got to be close to 70. And, you know, Kevin Nash is in his early 60s. Buy my T-shirts, buy my dolls, you like that. And I go, that kind of heel behavior, that kind of promo on the fans makes me want to go buy a Kevin Nash figure because he's legit heel. I said, I find it funny and entertaining because he's doing his job as a bad guy. It's great. I go, these people aren't like this in real life. Sure, they're tough guys, but they're doing a character. Mm-hmm. And I go, as long as a wrestler is able to do his character and do it well and actually have skills on the mic and everything, I mean, I go, a lot of these guys, they've got knee operations. They've had knee operations, hip operations, back operations. Some of them have actually gotten shorter because they had to do like a complete knee replacement and, you know, shorten them. I think like Hogan City lost like 2 or 3 inches off his height.
Yeah.
And I mean, these guys have a lot of money and they've done really well, but to go back out there at that age after having all of these surgeries, I mean, that says something. You know, they don't have to do this. And so a lot of them don't. I mean, I know Ricky Morton's got a wrestling school and, you know, he's kind of chugging along, but to go back in the ring and do this stuff and take bumps, I mean, that says something in my book, at least.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, Ricky Morton, I think, like you said, I think around now, supposedly he's 70, but I feel like he's 105 years old. Cause I feel like I was watching him when I was a little kid, and he doesn't look that much different. He just looks like an older version.
Right.
Yeah. But here, him and Robert Gibson, they have the same match. It's you watch a Rock and Roll Express match now, it's the same match you watched back in the 80s. It's the double drop kicks. It's the Ricky Morton getting the heat on him, Robert Gibson with the hot tag. Like, and it still works.
He's all full of energy. He's fresh.
Yeah.
It's a great. Fresh tag. Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing.
You got me going on tag teams here, and I had two of them just hit me as you were saying that. And one of them I wanted to bring up that you and I have never talked about is the Fantastics.
Yeah.
I love the Fantastics, man.
The Fantastics are great. And the thing with the Fantastics are, it took me a while to understand them when I was a kid because I was a WWF guy and I started watching the old NWA and I love the Rock and Roll Express. And I saw the Fantastics come out, and they would walk around the ring, and they would hug all the women.
Yes!
But all the women, it wasn't attractive women, no offense.
No!
Women. It was all these, like, heavier set, like, housewives. And I was like, is this for real? Like, it felt so so weird to me. And then they would get in the ring, and they would be great. And they would have great matches. I remember their matches with the Midnight Express were amazing.
The out of the ring, they had some good rivalry. Yeah,
and Cornette running around and stuff. But it took me so long to understand what was going on. But it's like the NWA was just so different than the WWF. It was just such a different – but these women would go crazy. And they would also come out – they'd come out with their little bow ties on. Like, they look like
– like your Chippendales?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Right. And it was so much different than, like, the tag teams in the WWF, like Demolition, the Heart Foundation, Powers of Pain. You know, it's like Chippendale guys coming out hugging these housewives. It was so bizarre. But – and also, like, the thing that stands out to me, too, is the guardrail at those NWAs oftentimes was just a string. It was just like a piece of string you find in your local indie show, whereas WWE has this, like, big barricades. Like, it just felt much more, like, hands-on, like experimental, you know? Like, you could literally get in front row seat and hug one of the Fantastics if that's your thing, you know? But, yeah, I love the Fantastics.
Yeah, and like some of the women didn't, you could tell they didn't want to let go. And it's
that's the best part too. The women holding on, and then the guy, they're like, okay, we got it, we got to do a match. But you know that the women, this is their moment. Like, and I can only imagine the things they were probably whispering into the Fantastic's ear, you know, trying to trying to whatever, but right. It's just a different time.
Yeah, it's funny because like I love their theme music that they had when they debuted. They were in AWA, I think, and then they went over to, right? Am I not mistaken?
I believe you're correct. Yeah, they went over to Jim Crockett, NWA, yeah.
Yeah, from Vern Gagne's thing. So they went over, and it's great. I love their theme music, and I wish I could get a clip of it. And it was Bobby Fulton and Tommy Rogers, the Fantastics, and it echoed, and it had this music, ding, 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 ding,
yeah.
ding, like this yeah. 80s pop. It was great that they had the announcer's voice built into the music. It's so awesome because... Yep. It's genius. Yep. The announcer was built into the theme song. It was, I was like, that's smart money right there. That's yep. that's genius. You know, you don't even need an announcer. It's just hit the track. It's awesome.
Yeah, cool. Exactly.
And I mean, they were such a very talented team, and it was another one I liked, another good tag team I liked. I liked the Varsity Club and.
Oh yeah.
I mean, they were just great, and it's kind of funny though. You see some of those rivalries, but then you get someone like Jimmy Jam Garvin, like Jimmy Garvin. It was really funny because towards the end of the 80s, he kind of just quietly disappeared, you know, from the WCW. And he's just like, well, my time was up. It's my time yep. to go. And like, he's in like his early 40s. And he's just like, I did my time and I'm just going to go fly my planes now.
You know? Yeah. I was going to say he became like a pilot and stuff. And I saw a picture of him maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and I didn't recognize him. Like I had to read yeah. the caption, like, oh, this is Jimmy Garvin, because I'm used to the guy with, like, the long hair and the chest hair and the glitzy, yeah. glamorous, you know, sparkling outfit. And he would, like, get, like, a goatee and, like, a shaved head. Like, and obviously, you know, however many years later, 20 years later, but I didn't recognize him.
Yeah, he's one of those guys where I'm like, I often wonder, do you think that he was wearing a wig?
You know, that's a great question. Because... In retrospect, I can see it. I feel like it'd be hard to wrestle with that on, but also, it's not like he took a lot of crazy bumps. The Freebirds were kind of mostly kind of yeah. like doing the kind of bumps where you could definitely keep a wig on. That's not yeah. a bad theory, actually.
Right, and a lot of his singles matches before he joined the Freebirds, they were very quick. They were like 2 minutes in and he was yeah. done. And he would fly to a lot of the different locations instead of driving. He'd fly his own plane, I believe.
Oh, I did not know that. Wow.
Yeah, I believe that towards his end of his tenure, he was able to fly to these different places. I think there's some wrestlers that have talked about that. Oh, yeah, it's great. We got to go up in Jimmy's plane and everything. It was great. And it was like, we went from Greenbow to Greenwood. It was fantastic, you know, or something right, like right. that. And I love the Southern, like lifestyles that those people had. They're just, I really think that it fed into the wrestling. And the wrestling, to me, my brother and I always really, really liked the NWA stuff a lot more. And it was ironic because we lived in the Northeast. We lived in New York. And,
right. Oh, yeah.
And we did watch primetime wrestling and everything and
yeah.
Wrestling Challenge. And we could watch the Canadian stuff. And like we had discussed before in past episodes, like my brother and I, we got to see both the U.S. side and the Canadian shows. And so that was one of the deals where we could see both programming. It was like normal. It was like on public, like you just had rabbit ears. You were good to go.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. And so, Jody didn't watch NWA at all. I don't think. I think he was into the cartoon characters, like the more over the top
right.
cartoon characters and stuff. But my brother and I, we really liked guys like Legion of Doom and Doom and
yeah
I mean these guys are doing scaffold matches and everything well before WWF at the time had the gumption to do anything like that
yeah
you know oh,
yeah.
And they only picked up on that after I think some of the more independent promotions in like WCW in the early days. I mean look at the scaffold match with the Rock and Roll Express and the Midnight Express and had those guys, or was it Rock and Roll, was it Midnight Express versus Legion of Doom?
Yeah, it was 80 Starrcade 86, Night of the Skywalker yeah. was the Road Warriors and Midnight Express. That's the one where Cornette is hanging from the thing and he drops down.
Blew his knees out.
And I remember, man, like, I grew up in, like, at the time I was living in Detroit, and it was a big, it was right around the time wow. of WrestleMania 3, but I wasn't into wrestling at the time, but I remember everyone was talking about WrestleMania 3. And it was a couple years later that I got into it, and I remember going to my local Blockbuster Video, and I saw this cassette, which was Starrcade 86, Night of the Skywalkers, and I was like, that's such a cool name. And I see that it's and I was like, these wrestlers are up in the air on a scaffold, and they're fighting each other? Like, that blew my 10-year-old mind, and I couldn't wait to get home and watch it. And then I'm watching it, and I'm watching Cornette fall off of it into the arms of Big Bubba. Like, I was like, this is so cool. And then it's like, a Flair, you know, because every Flair match, he's like bleeding, and it's just face, yeah. Blonde hair covered, and, you know, and Dusty Rhodes, like, It just felt so raw. There wasn't the big glitz and glamour. It was in these small arenas. They were dark, and it was just in the guys. It seemed much more real. It seemed more sports oriented. It seemed like, you know, there wasn't as flashy moves and flashy lights and stuff like that. It was just, it blew my mind. It was just so different. It was so awesome.
Yeah, and enjoy this. You're officially street tough because you were born in you lived in Detroit for a while.
Oh man, that hurts the street cred. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That, wow. I didn't know that. I never knew you lived in Detroit. That you're officially tough now. You don't need brass knuckles.
I mean, it was if there is such a thing, it was the good side of Detroit, but it was still Detroit. Nonetheless.
You didn't live near the big tire, right? You see the big tire, you better turn around.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
My in-laws made that mistake. I don't know why they were in Detroit, but they saw the big tire, like, we're in trouble. They knew that they were in bad, you know. And so they're like, yeah, we better, because they're from, like, eastern Washington where nothing happens, you know.
Right.
Yeah, so. So, yeah, no, that's great. And I was wondering also, have you been keeping up with maybe, like, some of the guys that are retired, but do you watch a lot of, like shoot interviews with like Luger and those kind of guys that, I mean, are you planning on going to any signings if they're around or autograph signings or?
I do. I watch a lot of the interviews. They have about four times a year. They have a big convention about 20 minutes from me, the Steel City Con. And they've been bringing a lot of AEW guys. They bring a lot of retired wrestlers. Like Flair's always there. Luger's been there past. Foley's always there. I don't go to the things. I'm not a big autograph collector, and also I'm cheap. And a lot of these guys charge so much. Like Ric Flair is like ridiculous amounts for a photo op. But what's really cool is they all do a Q&A session, and they post a Q&A session on their YouTube page, on the Steel City Con YouTube page. So I just sit here from the comfort of my couch and watch, you know, like Mick Foley talk about it or Flair or whatever. But yeah, I love stuff like that because I like the candidness of it. I like also just kind of like – you get nerds like me who will be in the audience and ask like questions that I want to know the answer to. You know what I mean? Like, how many times can Foley talk about being thrown off the Hell in the Cell? You know, so asking more questions about like, you know, like traveling the road with the Undertaker or you know, like what was it like with your feud with Triple H? Little stuff like that. So that stuff will never get old to me. It will always interest me to hear these guys talking about their glory days, answering questions, reliving matches. Yeah, I've always been a big shoot interview guy. Shoot interviews are another thing that I used to order on VHS tapes, you know? And, like, back in the day, it would be like, you know, you'd pay, like, $30 for this VHS tape, and you put it in, and it's literally kind of like me and you right now. It's just a guy in front of a camera talking, and he's just talking for, like, 3 and 4 hours. And I remember my mom would be like, how is this interesting to you? This seems so boring. I'm like, this is the most interesting thing in the world because they're just going through. I remember I had one of Lex Luger, and it was just like literally like breaks down his entire career. What were you thinking during this match? Well, what about this angle? And I was just like riveted by the whole thing. I mean, that's like crack cocaine for a wrestling nerd like me.
Yeah, and I didn't realize it wasn't until probably I didn't really – even in a peripheral fashion, get back into wrestling and like getting, I really got back into the old stuff. I never really globbed onto the new stuff really.
Yeah.
But that was about circa 2013. And yeah, that was about when I started like listening to like your show.
Mm-hmm.
And then realized, well, he's a wrestling fan too. And so it was great because I started to like become aware that a lot of people either had podcasts or they obviously were in my generation because they remembered a lot of the same things I did, like you do. In fact, you know even more than I do. I mean, there's, you know, I'm like a, I just skimmed the surface, but it's my more in depth came from watching the network like last year. Yeah, I wish the network was still the way it was. I think the Peacock thing kind of screwed it over.
Yep.
And I knew I had that feeling it was too good to be true and it wasn't going to last.
Yep. Yep. You
just know when the other shoe's going to drop, and they sold off the Peacock and now it sucks.
Yep. And I agree.
They're going through and scrubbing all the matches. Like, you know what? Don't touch the matches. They are what they are. Don't be a revisionist. You don't have to knock down every statue that ever was erected because you don't like it.
Yep.
Don't screw with the wrestling footage.
I agree.
I'm so tired of this cancel culture garbage. Don't screw with wrestling.
I agree.
And that's what's happened, and it makes me sick.
Yep.
You know, think about if you're one of those wrestlers that was the greatest match of your life, and something is on that footage, and, oh, we don't like that. We need to take that out. You're erasing their legacy.
Yep.
I know I sound like Jim Cornette right now, but it's true.
No, it is true, and I hate the fact that I pay for Peacock. So if I'm paying for your service, let me see the things as they are. You don't get to pick and choose, we're going to take this off. You don't get to see this. No, if you're telling me the entire collection of Monday Night Raw from the beginning to end, if you're telling me that all is going to be there, I expect it to be there in the version that it aired on TV. I've been watching a lot of the old ECWs. And it drives me crazy because they took out all the music. I understand that's like a copyright thing or whatever, but still, like,
that
was such a point of ECW, was the music, the promos. It was so different than everything else, and it still is, but it's so – now you watch it, it's just – it's got all the generic WWE touches, the editing they've done, the redubbing, all that stuff drives me crazy. And I wish I had kept all my – old VHS tapes. Actually, I still have my old VHS tapes, but you know, over time they wear down or whatever. And I'm just too lazy. I'm not going to be popping in a VHS tape, you know, every time I want to watch something. But it's like, I wish there was a way that I could just have all those stuff from when it originally aired and have it in a streaming platform like that. And that's what the network is supposed to be. But you're right. The original network was great. And then I knew as soon as they sold to Peacock, this big, you know, NBC, you know, conglomerate, of course they're going to start, you know, one by one they started erasing stuff and changing stuff and tweaking things and overdubbing stuff. And it's like, come on, man, like it was a different time. We get it. You know, like, I understand the times have changed or whatever, but you can't erase history. You know, like these things happen. They exist. You can't just change it because it reflects bad in your corporate image now. Like, I hate that.
Yeah, it's garbage. It's all sanitizing to fit their image, like you just said. And it's like, if you don't like it, don't acquire it.
Exactly.
Let's ask this question. Who owns that library now? Who essentially owns the tapes?
That's a great question. Yeah.
I'd like to know. Are they just, is it, I'm sure there's people out there that are probably going to be like kicking and screaming. They know the answer. Congratulations. Okay.
Yeah, right.
But we don't.
We don't. It's
kind of like, it's something where you just made me think about, like, well, who owns these tapes? Does Vince still own the tapes?
I would think that Vince does because it's his creative property. But if you're on Peacock, then technically I can see how NBC might. It's probably a gray area. I'm not sure, actually, who officially would own it. Because there's a lot of talk all the time now about WWE possibly being bought or trying to sell themselves to different companies. And it's just like, if that happens, a lot of the stuff that me and you remember – or it's just going to disappear forever. Like, it's just going to be gone.
Well, I will say, though, now, I don't pay for Peacock, but I do pay for YouTube, okay?
Okay.
And YouTube is the best place now, I think, to go watch old matches.
Yeah. Because
people like me and you are uploading their footage.
Right.
And I'm telling you, man, there is a treasure trove of stuff even the network didn't have, because it's got AWA matches. It's got all that stuff. All that. I think even some Portland wrestling, what little exists, is on there.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's our best bet at this point. I won't pay for Peacock. Yeah. I wrote off the possibility of having decent stuff on there when I had heard what Peacock was doing as far as stripping out. It's like, you know, it's like you have, let's say, like, someone throws a hot dog on the grill for you, and then they burn it. You don't like burnt hot dogs. Well, go ahead and pick all the black pieces off. You're left with this husk of a hot dog.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't want to eat this. It looks terrible.
Right.
It's exactly. Like vultures have been at this thing or cats or something.
Right. Yeah.
You have a shell of what you wanted to watch.
Yeah.
And so it's like, we're not little kids.
You know, yeah. And that's the thing. Let me as an adult decide what I can want, what I can handle, what I can't. Quit trying to, like, you know, pick and choose. Like, yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Yeah. I think that the wrestling business, with the competition that's around, it's kind of neat to see how AEW has kind of become, really been some kind of competition, whether WWE likes it or not. They're a known product. Mm-hmm. And I'm not one of those people that really dislikes wrestlers because they have certain views on public, maybe like because of their political stance or whatever. I mean, for example, someone like Chris Jericho. I've always liked Chris Jericho. Now, I will say, though, I haven't seen any current matches that he's done, but I do like Chris. I've always been a Chris Jericho fan for his work in the ring. And that's why I like Chris Jericho. I'm not friends with him. I don't follow him around, like, every little thing he says online. I don't really frequent social media that much. I post my podcast onto my Twitter page. Facebook is an automatic post. I don't even go on Facebook and really post on my Facebook page because I really don't like Facebook. I never really have. Twitter, to me, is just more – I have a little bit more control over what I personally want to see.
Yeah.
And I don't have all this advertising thrown at me. So I tend to just use Twitter if I like, well, you and I communicate through the inbox and, if we're not texting or something. And I'm more happy with the way Twitter's set up for how we do our shows.
I agree.
And so, that being said, I think it's great that there's different promotions that are starting to get a little more traction. Like, do you watch any of the NWA Power stuff or?
Yeah, I watched the first season and a half, season or two or three seasons, till right around the pandemic hit, I think is when I kind of faded out. And then I've still been reading results, and I catch little stuff here and there. And I try to watch the pay-per-views and stuff like that. I'm probably about a month or two behind on what's been going on there, but I enjoy the setting of studio wrestling. Like the way they kind of have them, like a TV studio and stuff like that. I really like that. And the way they had like the interviewer like over on the stage, like it felt like the old NWA. It was really, really good. I really enjoyed it. And and they had a lot of really good talent come through there too. Like a lot of guys are now, most of them are in AEW, if not a couple of them, like Eli Drake is now in NXT and a couple other guys. But yeah, a really good kind of farm system. Run by, of all people, Billy Corgan of Smashing Pumpkins. Like, who would have thought? But that guy gets it.
Yeah. And tip of the hat to him for doing something like this. It seems like it's doing really well. And it's a YouTube-only, if I'm not mistaken, a YouTube-only platform, which I think is genius. Because then you don't have to screw with networks.
Yep.
It's just a brilliant, just straight wrestling. And it's kind of like, I feel like Nick Aldis, though, is kind of like the Nick Bockwinkel of the promotion, where he always has the belt, but the guy's really good and he's an imposing figure and it's deserving. And I think in a way that really generates a lot of guys to story wise to want to try and climb that ladder to maybe go up against him for the title. Cause it seems to me, I think about the way they've built, they have that guy always be the champ, is like, that's the standard, right? And you have a lot of these up and coming guys that are trying to prove themselves in a way, And I feel like it's a little bit more kayfabe or legit wrestling. They keep the kayfabe a little bit better than WWE does these days. Exists anymore. But
and also what I like about them and what I like about AEW is, and it's such a simple thing, but it's the consistency of the storylines. When you watch WWE, two guys will be feuding or setting something up, and then that's it.
That's why I quit watching it. I got sick of it.
AEW, the thing I like about AEW too is, and NWA does this too, is you are rewarded for being a viewer who watches everything. Because sometimes they'll set something up, they'll have two guys interact, and you'll be like, oh, that could be a feud down the line. And then like a month or two later, that program will start to happen, that feud, and it'll, and they'll reference, oh, you remember however many weeks ago this happened? So it's like, yeah, it rewards you for paying attention. Everything that happens on those shows means something that's going to lead somewhere, where WWE, you can't get invested in anything, because here's a perfect example. This past week on Raw, going into Raw, the only thing they advertised was a tag team title match between RK-Bro and AJ Styles and Omos, and it's, they get to the show on Monday, and they're advertising totally different things, and they never even acknowledge it happens. They do that all the time. They advertise things, and then they just pretend like, oh, what? We never said that. And it's like, that's how you drive your fans away. And there's been a lot of stuff, too, where they advertise this wrestler's appearing on this show in your city or whatever, and then he's not there. And it's like a lot of these kids, you know, it's a big deal for them to see their favorite wrestler. And then you get there, and it's just no explanation given, no refunds. It's you telling your audience that you have no respect for them. You do not care about them.
Right.
And what I love about AEW is when I heard an interview with Tony Khan, who's the guy who runs it, and he talks about how he would basically sit at home and book Dynamite with his action figures. And that's how he kind of books the shows now, is he thinks about what matches do I want to see and how would I like to get there. And he has a notepad and he writes it all out. He basically does nerd fantasy booking like I would do. And I'm like, this guy is one of us. This guy is a guy like us. And he references how he used to love the old WCW Worldwide. And he references guys like,
oh,
the Gambler and Joey Mags, like some of these old jobber guys, you know what I mean? Who like, to me, that I would watch every week and be like, come on. I hope these guys get a win. Like, this is a guy who grew up in my generation watching the same stuff that we watched. He's a fan like I was. He's talks about playing with his figures, booking territories, booking pay-per-views, all in his bedroom. And I'm like, I can relate to this guy. Like this, and now he's, and it shows in his company. It shows in the product he puts out, the matches, the characters, the storylines, everything about it. That's why I'm like, I'm on a big AEW high right now. Like, I'm really into this company. And I think it all comes back to him at the end of the day. He's the Vince McMahon, essentially, of that company.
Well, it's great because I was sold on AEW at their first pay-per-view.
Yeah,
because they had all those I don't want to use a term that seems cruel or derogatory. Let's just say that they had a wide variety of characters in that match.
Yeah,
and it was hilarious to me. And like, you know, like Jim Cornette says, oh, this is terrible. I was like, no, I think it's hilarious. And right. he takes pro wrestling very seriously from a certain point of view, which I love. Hey, I love. Yes.
I agree.
You know, I appreciate his knowledge base. I love his fandom of the wrestling business for the stuff that, you know, I think we can both agree that he is very passionate about the more credible, awesome parts of WWE and justifiably not complimentary of the parts of wrestling that are just terrible.
Yep.
And I really like what he brings to the table. I love hearing that guy's stories. I mean, it's unbelievably cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, he managed to get himself kicked off of NWA Power, which I was really sad about because I really liked his enthusiasm in the first few episodes. But then, you know, he doesn't have a filter. I'm all for people who don't have filters. You know,
and this is Jim Cornette you're talking about, right?
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. It's Jim Cornette. He's going to say what he's going to say. And I can respect it. I really do. You know, so I was really sad that he wasn't part of that anymore. But I really love, like, there's that segment in Dark Side of the Ring where he's up in Castle Corner and he's up in that vault that he's got. It's that long hallway. It looks like at the top of his house. And he's got all of these documents and old newspaper. I mean, blew me away. I wish someday in person I could go and see that. And I would pay the guy money to see that stuff, have him walk me through that. And I want to hear about every single article, every single document that he's got in his collection. I would say, feel free. You're not going to bore me. I love all this stuff.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Just go for it.
Yeah.
And the guy's so passionate about the wrestling business. So I can really appreciate that. And it's like, I love that story he had about Del Wilkes, the Patriot, and they were talking about Sable or something. And it was at the late 90s. And when he's in WWE and they're like, you know, I really need to get back to Del Wilkes. you know, about the Patriot here, like that. And he's just like, he's talking about how like they're not using him because he was such a good talent and everything. And he's just like, you know, I'm sick and tired. He had that whole Kevin Dunn altercation.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, Jim, you're really tiresome. Like that. He's doing like the Nutty Professor thing. It's so bad.
And speaking of Kevin Dunn, that's the other thing that drives me crazy about WWE is, and it's been this way for years, but when I watch it, I feel like I'm going to have a seizure because there's 95 camera cuts in 3 seconds. It's like, just show me what's happening in the ring. And it's just like, cut, 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 cut. It's so jarring and ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's. I don't want to get motion sickness watching wrestling from my couch. Like, just relax. Like, I want to be able to see what's happening, like a sporting event, instead of these frantic cuts. I don't know why they think that is good or that it makes it more quality programming, but it drives me crazy. And they're the only ones that do that. No other wrestling company does that but them.
Yeah, and for the longest time, too, they were the only wrestling company that was really on television. So they're probably like, well, it worked then. We'll just keep doing it. And
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And sometimes I wonder, is there ever really a gorilla position now?
Yeah, I mean, there's the position where Vince is, and then, you know, whoever, I think Michael Hayes is still there, and Bruce Pritchard or whatever, but...
Wow, he's still there, wow. Yeah. I guess he did do the fanny pack thing when he got inducted into the Hall of Fame.
So. Yeah, that was funny, yeah.
Yeah, he did the whole song. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And he was still singing that while he was huffing around the place, you know.
Yeah.
Being able to hear Bad Street was great, and I think, you know... But, you know... And one of the final topics I want to talk to you about is the dark side of the ring with the plane ride from hell. What were your thoughts on just how that was done? Maybe not anything specific with Flair or any of that stuff, but just how do you feel that show, the way it's done? I know a lot of people say it's one-sided, the way the producers of that show portray past events and the way they interview people. As a viewer, how do you feel about that show? Like, do you agree with that, or?
I can see that argument, but this is my takeaway is I love that show. To me, that's appointment viewing.
Right. So do I. Yeah.
I think it's great. And right. I look at it, I watch it because I'm a wrestling fan. And I know what's great about this show is I know a lot of people who have never in their life given it about wrestling who watch that show. They don't watch the current product, but they're like, oh, I like Dark Side of the Ring. Let me check that out.
Yeah.
And because I work with a couple guys and they'll come and ask me questions about stuff because they've never watched a day of wrestling in their life, but they watch Dark Side of the Ring. Like, well, what's up with this and that? And so I start, you know, telling them. And but my takeaway is that's a show. And sure, it's one side, but I think it does a good job of covering everything. But again, it comes back to the nature of the world we live in. And if you feel like it's one sided, it's very easy to find the other side of the story. Just a quick Google search will get you, you know, in that particular instance, Flair side of the story of everything that happened. And you can put it all together. But I think they do a really good job of trying to tell the whole story. And oftentimes there's a lot of times, you know, where they say, like, we reached out to this person. Or there's a lot of people that don't want to be interviewed for that show. You know, I watched one of the more recent episodes was about XPW, which was kind of like a more extreme ECW. It was this director who created this company and all this crazy stuff. And they said, like, we reached out to Rob Black, the guy who created XPW, for comment, and he didn't want to participate. So we can basically just tell the story from the wrestlers that were there that do want to talk to us and from what, you know, we know, and, you know, and just try and put forth the best story that we can, the best product we can. But I think it speaks a lot to the quality of the work they do when you have people like Martha Hart. When they did the episode on Owen Hart, Martha Hart basically wrote off the wrestling industry after her husband, you know, died in that tragic accident, rightfully so. And you know, but she appeared on camera and told her side of the story for the first time because she, I guess, you know, I'm assuming trusted and respected Dark Side of the Ring and the story they told. The way they handled the Von Erichs and the tragedy that family's been through. And told that story. I think they're telling really, I mean, it's called Dark Side of the Ring. They're telling really intense, horrible stories, but I think they do it in the best way possible to try and paint the broader picture. And I just love it. And I think anyone who isn't familiar with it, even if you don't like wrestling, they're all, most of them, if not all of them, are available on YouTube, if not on demand. Check it out. It's an intriguing story. If you just like personal stories and intriguing dramas, you know, this is a really great show.
It reminds me of the format of before these shows were in the vogue, Behind the Music. And you could watch,
yes,
you know,
yes.
I don't know anything about Tony Orlando, but hey, this is a great episode.
That is a great point. Yes, exactly. Right. I didn't know who Tony Orlando was. And I watched this episode Behind the Music and I was like,
yeah.
I mean, I still don't care about his music that much, but my God, what a fascinating story. Yes, right. That's exactly what it is. It is the Behind the Music of wrestling. And yeah, that's a great comparison. Yeah, you're right. Behind the Music was such a big deal when I was a kid, man. Like, and I got turned on to different music and bands and stuff from that show.
And I could tell you there's not a single episode I don't like.
I agree with you. Yeah, right. That's the thing. There's not a bad episode. Exactly.
Yeah, I miss that show.
Yeah. I wonder. Yeah, I'm thinking now, I wonder if those are available online somewhere. I'd go back and watch those.
I think there's a few on YouTube.
Yeah, probably.
I couldn't tell you how many times I watched. Like, I like a lot of the metal bands. Like, the Ozzy one was on there. And because I always liked the whole Randy Rhoads thing, you know. And
yeah,
not to get too much into to Randy Rhoads, but great stuff. And I'd love to do another one of these with you, and maybe we could hit some different facets of the business as far as maybe where some rock bands are brought in, because like WCW had Kiss actually there. Remember that in the late night, they were promoting their Psycho Circus album and their big reunion tour in the late 90s. I'd like to get into some of that. Maybe what you thought of some of the, like the demon gimmick, you know, the wrestler there.
It's so funny you bring that up, because over the weekend, TNA did their big Bound for Glory pay-per-view, and they had a battle royal where, you know, it was when a title shot, and they brought back the demon as an entrant in the battle royal. And he looks exactly the same, just a couple years older. But yeah, I was watching, I'm like, oh my God, that's the demon. Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. I liked his I liked the fact that they picked the most ominous guy, you know, Gene Simmons to do it. You know? Because Gene's a big dude, you know.
So. Sure is. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, before we go, let's just revisit Halloween Havoc '96 or '98 real quick. Was it '98 the one with Hogan and Warrior?
Hogan and Warrior. Yeah.
It was great. Man. The Warrior did. People would. You see the fans if. Guys, go back and watch some of the matches that were, you know, Warrior had the one Warrior Nation, and notice how the NWO were toying with him so much. The smoke would go up and he'd go into the ring, and then one of the guys from NWO pointed out, like, hey, there he goes, he's under the ring, spoiling his whole gimmick.
Yeah, and, I mean, it was just the inmates were running the asylum, like it was just, and I'm you know, the Warrior is what he is, but yeah. The NWO was just so like, we're too cool for school, and we're just gonna we're gonna bring the Warrior in, and we're just gonna essentially humiliate him, and you know, and that Hogan Warrior match from Halloween Havoc has got to be one of the worst matches I've ever seen. Yet I tend to watch it at least once a year, and my favorite part of that match is when Hogan is trying to go to throw the fireball at him, and he can't get the paper to light, and it's just. It's so painful to watch because I feel like it goes on forever, and Warrior has to like starts to come after him and then has to stop, and like Hogan's trying to get the thing lit, and it's just it's so bad. It's just so bad.
Well, and that was towards when the Warrior was like in really still he's still young enough to be in like, you know, decent shape and be able to do probably a full length match, but. Man, I tell you, that guy would run out of gas pretty quick, though. I mean, because he'd come in so, even when he was younger, he'd come in so strong.
Yeah.
And someone had mentioned a very interesting point about his Hall of Fame night that is tragic. His Hall of Fame induction, he died a few days later, unfortunately. And I'm trying to remember who it was, but he says, when you've been out of the business that long, and you go back in the ring and the energy's there with the crowd and everything, your adrenaline's going and your heart's going 90 miles an hour. and I'd never heard this before, the thought was that his heart couldn't handle the adrenaline rush.
Oh, wow. That makes a lot of sense, actually.
And I never thought about that. And I'm trying to remember who was it said it. If I find out, I'll text you, because I was like, I never thought about that.
That makes a lot of sense. I never thought about that either. But yeah, because at that point he'd been away for so you figure probably 98 was kind of his last main thing with WCW. So then the Hall of Fame was that 2014, 15, something like that.
Yeah, and exactly. And so, but before, he had some Orlando Jordan match.
Oh, yeah.
Terrible.
The match in Australia, yeah, with Orlando Jordan. Yeah, you're right.
He ran out of gas so quick.
Yeah, and that was bad.
And I think that Orlando Jordan guy, he pulled him through the match.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
That he was, you could see him huffing and puffing. And I'm like, guy, just like Vader. Vader was told by a doctor, you need to stop doing this.
Yep.
But now that we know why, I mean, it seemed like Vader was, he needed to keep working. I don't think he had a lot of cash. So,
he was doing
a lot of, crazy. Yeah, so maybe I'd like to do this again when you're available, and we can hit on some different points. And it was very refreshing to be able to do a wrestling episode.
Dude, I like talking wrestling to me isn't even like, it's like not even recorded. You know what I mean? Like, it's so easy. It's so much fun. It's just like, especially old school stuff. Like, it's the easiest thing in the world. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and half of it's just the characters and their lifestyles behind, you know, the years of their career. I mean, we could talk about, you know, the Beverly Brothers and the Shaker Heights Spike and all that stuff, too. I mean, it's...
Yeah, we can.
So you get, like, Lanny Poffo. He's like, there's a move called the Shaker Heights Spike. I cannot do a Lanny Poffo.
That's not a bad Lanny Poffo, though, I gotta say.
it's a soothing voice, right?
And it's funny, too, because I believe it's Beau Beverly, who Wayne Bloom, his son, actually, is in NXT right now. And, that's awesome. He looks just like him. He's like 7 feet tall. He's a big, tall dude, but he looks just like his dad. And I think you can tell they're high on him. I think he's going to be pushed to the moon here. I think
they were a great tag team. They were physically very strong guys.
For sure.
They had a good setup going there. And I think when they had the Genius as a manager, that was a pretty cool deal. I enjoyed, as a kid, seeing those. I thought that was really neat, but that was a dangerous move. I mean, there was a couple of jobbers that you can go on YouTube and find this, folks. They put this guy in that move and his neck went the wrong way.
Yeah.
And you're tossing these guys around like rag dolls, you know?
Yeah. And there's I might be wrong on this, but it's one of the Royal Rumbles. I think it's Royal Rumble 93, where it's the Beverly Brothers versus Steiner Brothers, and they are just throwing each other around the ring. Like, it's just suplex. Like, it's just – it's a great tag team match, but just these two great tag teams just no regard, just throwing each other all over the place. It's crazy. But, yeah, it's – I love the Beverly Brothers. I loved them when
physical
they were –
specimens, yeah.
Yeah, I loved them when they were the Minnesota – was it the Minnesota Wrecking Crew? No, that was Ole and Arn? There was something in AWA. There was some kind of Wrecking Crew.
Yeah, because they got their start in AWA.
Yeah.
And then they got signed by WWE later on, and they seemed to be an asset. And a lot of guys are doing that because, hey, big money, you know.
Yeah.
So I know who it was now. Now I know who said about Warrior. It was the Warlord who brought that up about the Warrior's heart.
That makes sense.
Because he was I just watched the interview last night, and I was like, this guy's a sharp guy. I believe that's what it was.
Okay.
I have to agree with that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Taking a hit to the ticker like that, so.
Yeah.
Anyway, this was a lot of fun. I don't want to stop, but I know we both have to go. But, I really want to do this again.
Cool, man. Yeah, let me know anytime.
Yeah, and, enjoy your weekend and hang, you know, have a good time. And
yeah, you too.
Stay safe out there, you know.
Are your kids going trick-or-treating?
Yeah, here's the funny thing. They do this thing around here called Trunk or Treat. I call it Drunk or Treat, but there's no – I just made it up as kind of a joke. Wouldn't it be funny if, like, adults did that and they were smashed?
Right, yeah.
I was like, I could see someone doing that, but now they probably just stole my idea. You know? It's like you go around – I don't drink, but you go around to, like, different trunks. Hey, let me try some of that. You know, they're like the trial sites that you have in those fridges at the hotels.
Heck yeah, yeah.
You're like, I'm on board for that.
Yeah, I would be sure. Absolutely.
It's funny, dude. That's awesome. So, yeah. Well, have a great Halloween because it's Sunday.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's going to be awesome. So, we'll catch you next time, folks. And, oh, quick shout out. Check out Ryan's show, Fireside Chat. Great storyteller. Excellent.
Thanks, man.
I tell you, any episode that I listen to, I'm not disappointed.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and it's just, yeah, I have such a back catalog of your shows to listen to.
Well, I hope you enjoy them. I hope I live up to your expectations.
You never fail, man.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate it. And I just want to, if people are listening to the show, I want to say, too, there's a great show on YouTube called Wrestling with Trivia. It's a trivia league that I compete in for wrestling Ooh. Trivia. And it's really fun. If anyone's ever interested in getting involved, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter. I can put you in touch with the people. It costs no money, but it's just a bunch of wrestling nerds answering 20 questions on YouTube, and it's super fun. And if you've made it this far on this podcast, I think you'll really like Wrestling with Trivia.
That's awesome. I didn't know about that. That's awesome. I'll check that out. Yeah.
Yeah, it's something I got involved in with the pandemic. You know, it's like the pandemic changed so many things. That like I would have never even heard of a wrestling trivia league on YouTube, and I think it basically started because of the pandemic. But that's one of the good things that came out of this whole thing.
One of the many good things.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's because people are still interesting.
So. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Exactly.
All right, folks. Well, we'll catch you next time, and check out Ryan's show, McSauce Boys, Ian, Paul, Matt. Check out their show. They're also good friends of the show, and. Also, check out my other show, Pod Rock, my buddy Ben Stape, we host that, and that's strictly music and musicianship and guitars, amps, all that stuff, so check that show out, and yeah, guys, have a good one, and have a safe Halloween, and eat lots of candy, and make a hog out of yourself.
Exactly.
All right, folks, we'll talk to you later.
See ya.